Welcome to The Markets, Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, April 10, 2020. Hello again, Orion Samuelson with you, joined by some other people this week, and I promise I'll try not to say the word coronavirus more than 100 times during this 30-minute report, because we spend our time looking back at the week just ended. We can't figure out what's going to happen in the week ahead, except the one thing I'm certain of is next Monday, the quarterly earnings report season will get underway with the big banks, as usual, starting the reports for the quarterly earnings season. So that I'm sure of. It will happen next week. But what else will happen? I haven't the foggiest idea. Wall Street rose yesterday for the third time in 4 days as the Federal Reserve unleashed its latest program designed to help local governments and businesses that are crushed by the moves to slow the outbreak of the coronavirus. In the $2.3 trillion package, the Fed said it would work with banks to offer 4-year loans to companies of up to 10,000 employees, and it would directly buy bonds of states and more populous counties and cities. One analyst in New York said it was unexpected, and it has definitely given a shot in the arm not only to the overall equity market, but also the high-yield market. And it helped take the sting out of another tough report on the labor market, with weekly initial jobless claims topping the 6 million mark for a second straight week. The defensive real estate and utilities sectors of the S&P rose more than 4%. And at the end of the trading day yesterday, going into this holiday weekend, the Dow Industrial Average up 285 points, ending the day yesterday and the week at 23,719. The S&P 500 index ended the week with a gain yesterday of 39 points to end at 2789. And the NASDAQ Composite Index ended the week at 81.53.75. There were some positive results yesterday. The S&P has gained more than 12% in the holiday shortened week on early signs of the outbreak hitting a peak and aggressive global stimulus. The Dow was up nearly 13%, poised for its biggest weekly percentage gain since 1938. And while public health experts stress the need to keep people apart to contain the contagion, the restrictions have strangled the economy, sparked widespread production cuts, layoffs, and projections of a severe recession. In a sign that the disease's curve was flattening in New York, which is the epicenter of the outbreak here in the United States, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said new hospitalizations fell to a fresh low of 200, although deaths in New York spiked to another new high. So, as I said, the one thing I'm certain of, about the only thing I'm certain of really, is the fact the corporate earnings season will start next week on Monday. Most of the major Wall Street banks and companies expected to outline more drastic measures as they look to bolster dwindling cash reserves. There were some reports this week that certainly had an impact on the market. Not as much as the coronavirus, probably, but they did have an impact. U.S. jobless claims, that report out Thursday, and the number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits in the last 3 weeks has blown past 15 million, with weekly new claims topping 6 million for the second straight time amid tough measures to control the coronavirus outbreak. The Thursday jobless claims report from the Labor Department, that's the most timely data on the economy's health. It strengthens economists' expectations of job losses of up to 20 million in April and their conviction that the economy is in deep recession. Looking at another report last week, the U.S. Consumer Price Index recorded its largest drop in 5 years, down in March, and further decreases are likely, again, because of the coronavirus impact on the stock market. The Labor Department said today the Consumer Price Index dropped 0.4% last month amid a tumble in the costs of gasoline, hotel accommodations, apparel, and airline tickets. That was the biggest drop since January of 2015. Restaurants, bars, and other social venues have been closed. Clothing retailers have also closed shop, as have some manufacturers, while transportation has been drastically scaled back, leaving millions of Americans unemployed. And then fears of a sharp global recession and an oil price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia have led to a collapse in crude oil prices. This is expected to offset price increases caused by bottlenecks in the supply chain. Then another report that certainly got the attention of Wall Street, the Producer Price Index. Labor Department said Thursday its Producer Price Index for final demand slipped 0.2% last month after dropping 0.6% in February. That, incidentally, was the biggest decline since January of 2015. Take the volatile food, energy, and trade services components out of the picture. Producer prices fell 0.2%. That's the largest drop since October of 2015. And again, who do we blame? What do we blame? Well, the coronavirus, or call it what you want to, but it's certainly having an impact on employment numbers, producer prices, and also on the consumer prices. Airlines have really been hurt by this, and boy, we can't get along without the airlines, certainly. As a matter of fact, President Trump, in his Friday conference call, said pretty much the same thing. We need the airline industry, but if you've been watching some of the television stories, you know that the airline load capacity is well below what it normally would be. There are millions of aviation jobs at risk because airlines in some countries can't even afford refunds. That warning came from the global airlines, who warned that 25 million jobs across the world could be at risk from the coronavirus travel downturn. The International Air Transport Association has held a series of weekly news conferences issuing increasingly desperate messages about the state of the airline industry and urging governments to help carriers. In its latest warning, the IATA, whose members include the likes of Lufthansa and British Airways, said global air travel slumped by 70% at the beginning of the second quarter, and the director general of that association said that airlines could not afford to issue refunds. He said that customers should accept vouchers. IATA highlighted the loss of jobs and the impact on the world economy if governments let airlines collapse. 3 months of severe travel restrictions plus lower traffic over 2020 could put 25 million jobs at risk. And airlines are burning through their cash reserves as they try to stay afloat, according to the IATA, and providing refunds for canceled flights as rules in many parts of the world in the European Union require them to do, they said, was simply not possible. And the biggest supplier of equipment to the Boeing company, Spirit AeroSystems, Boeing's top supplier, said the middle of the week it had stopped production for the plane maker for an indefinite period and would furlough workers supporting Boeing programs in Kansas and Oklahoma. Spirit's announcement came days after Boeing suspended production of its 787 Dreamliner airplane, citing the impact of the pandemic on the passenger loads. Boeing has already suspended production of its smaller 737 MAX airplanes, which await government approval to fly again following two deadly airline crashes. Spirit had previously announced plans to suspend production for Boeing for a period of 2 weeks, ending on the 8th of April. But whether or not they'll be able to end that suspension of purchases from Boeing still remains to be seen. One of the surprising parts of our industrial complex surprised me a little bit this week, and that was the real estate market. I talked to several realtors who said their business has been pretty good because of the decline in interest rates. And so the housing industry, from the standpoint of sales of current houses, did pretty well. Did as better than most of the economy this week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to that market. And if you're trying to buy a home or sell a home, then you can take advantage of the cuts in interest rates that we have seen during the past couple of months. Oh, one other note on the airline industry. This one is foreign, but we have to keep a watch on that foreign market. The Airbus company has shelved plans to add a French assembly line for its A321, that coming just 10 weeks after the expansion was launched. Again, the coronavirus fallout spreads to its best-selling jetliner. And that move heralds the start of a politically sensitive drive to cut investment and overheads after 8 years of production growth. Airbus announced plans for an extra assembly line in January when its problem was meeting record demand for the Airbus 321 from its site in Hamburg, Germany. But that now has suffered a production bottleneck, and it will deploy jobs threatened by the imminent demise of the A380. That's the world's largest jetliner, whose popularity with airlines has slumped in favor of smaller models. So it's impossible to talk about the market situation in agriculture or in the industrial complex without mentioning the impact of coronavirus. But we will take a look at the dairy side of the agricultural market activity when we continue with Mike Pearson and his guest on the markets.
Your best defense against breast cancer is a mammogram. I'm Dr. Sandy Goldberg, a breast cancer survivor and founder of a Silver Lining Foundation. And early detection saved my life. Are you uninsured? Are you underinsured? Are you a survivor and need follow-up testing? Feel like you have nowhere to turn? Times are tough, but getting a mammogram shouldn't be. Call us at 312-345-1322. A Silver Lining Foundation is here to help.
Joining us today is Brian Rice, a principal at Vault Ag. Brian, we've seen the milk markets really take a hit from this coronavirus, or at least from potential demand shocks or overproduction. Let's start with where prices sit today. What are we seeing in Class 3 milk pricing here mid-April?
Good morning, Mike. Class 3 milk pricing, you know, Class 3 being the main milk price, is it on a cash basis, it's in the $10 handle. Which is not good. Class 4 is the other main traded commodity for milk. It's in the $11 handle. These are, you know, really unprofitable levels for producers.
Now, help us kind of put that in perspective for a lot of our listeners or viewers who don't have a connection to the dairy industry. $10, $11, when was the last time we saw prices down there for producers?
Financial crisis of 2008, 2009.
Okay.
Was the last time we got into the $10 and $9 price handle. So it's been quite a long time since we've seen those prices. You know, a kind of standard rule of thumb to break even varies a ton based on the operation, based on geography, but a real crude rule of thumb is like, you know, $15 to $16, even $17 in some areas. It can be a break even price for a dairy producer.
Well, that is a struggle, $5 to $6 under break even per hundredweight. Brian, when a lot of our viewers are going to the grocery store over the past 2 weeks or month, you know, they've seen the milk cases empty. Why is there such a discount to the producer side when consumers are racing out to the store and buying all the milk they can get their hands on, it seems?
It's the crux of the problem there, Mike. Well, first of all, you've got a demand shock in general that's happening. And I think people resonate with oil. You know, the International Energy Agency says oil consumption is down over 20%. Some people are saying 30%. In dairy, the industry just got together, put their heads together, and they came up with a figure of 10%, meaning all of a sudden, overnight, there's a 10% hole in demand. So from a market that was fairly well balanced in January and early February, 10% of the demand vaporized instantly. So you got a market that is stuck long and the prices are collapsing, trying to adjust here.
And that hole in demand, it's not coming from the grocery store where we're seeing the shortages. It's predominantly coming from restaurants and schools and institutional milk buyers. Is that the trouble?
It is. So we lost a vast majority of the food service sector right out of the gate. And the gains in retail are nowhere near enough to compensate for that. So whereas, you know, people were consuming half their food from food service before, now all of it's in retail. It's putting a real strain on the retail supply chain. So the farmers are still producing the milk. But what's happening is the supply chain along the way, retail was not designed to handle the kind of volume it's handling right now, although that supply chain has responded fantastically. Everybody's trying to switch over to retail as fast as they can and at the same time deal with hemorrhaging demand. So it's a complicated problem.
So this is one of those things that we are probably going to see at least for a little while here in the industry until we get this coronavirus thing sorted out.
We are, and that's the interesting part. This is a demand problem. And the demand problem, in my opinion, comes from, call it social distance for shorthand, right? We didn't social distance in January and beyond. All of a sudden, social distance stormed onto the scene in the form of shelter in place, in the form of people not going out. That is what destroyed the demand. So the question is, what does social distance look like next month, the month after? And in my opinion, if we were at zero before Corona, and now we've gone to 100 on the social distance scale, we're going to start coming back down. Things will start unlocking. Shelter in places will reduce, but we're not going back to zero anytime real soon. And I think that's, none of us have a historical playbook to go off of on that one.
It's often been said that low prices cure low prices. They tend to spur demand. Do you think these low prices we're experiencing now are going to help improve the export picture for the American dairy industry?
They could. The export picture is really hampered in general. Logistics issues, supply chains are all kind of messed up. Demand is down in the U.S. So is it in other areas in the world that are experiencing the same problem. A silver lining there, though, skim milk powder or non-fat dry milk is one of the main exported products in the dairy complex. And in the United States, we've started to see a pretty good discount to prices in New Zealand. Our forward curve for skim milk powder is about 95 cents. New Zealand, they're about $1.10. Usually we're at somewhat of a parity. That may create some opportunities for us to export into Asia, although we're competing against the Europeans and their price is similar to ours. So there's no easy or wonderful export story at the moment.
Is there anything we can do as domestic consumers to help the dairy industry? You know, we talk a lot about fluid milk, and that seems to be the crux of the issue right now. But America has been consuming lots of cheese. Is that something we should keep doing?
Well, the good news is people are just naturally doing it. And that's one of the things that's happened is you're seeing people run for food that they love. And there's a great story for dairy, for milk, for cheese, for butter. At the retail, you're seeing consumers, you know, remember what they love. And it's been a really positive story for dairy. So I don't think people need to, like, go out of their way to be patriotic. I think they just need to follow their instincts and go with what they love.
Looking down the road, Brian, when do you expect this to turn around? Do we need a coronavirus cure before the dairy market flips?
We do. You know, the industry got together and they have tried to come up with a plan to help curtail supply. But ultimately, you need the demand to come back. And that means we need to get life back to normal here.
We need to get life back to normal, a sentiment I'm sure shared by a lot of our viewers. Brian Rice.
Your best defense against breast cancer is a mammogram. I'm Dr. Sandy Goldberg, a breast cancer survivor and founder of a Silver Lining Foundation. And early detection saved my life. Are you uninsured? Are you underinsured? Are you a survivor and need follow-up testing? Feel like you have nowhere to turn? Times are tough, but getting a mammogram shouldn't be. Call us at 312-345-1322. A Silver Lining Foundation is here to help.
An interesting look at the dairy industry that has been faced with its financial challenges for more than a year or two. And again, the coronavirus is having an impact because we are not selling the fluid milk that we did before the shutdown of the National School Lunch Program. I think I told you last week that the biggest buyer of fluid milk in the United States is the National School Lunch Program. And of course, with the schools closed, a lot of that market has gone away as well. But let me talk a little bit about maybe some help for the dairy industry, because the National Milk Producers Federation thanked the Department of Agriculture for allowing discarded milk to be counted toward milk marketings for the dairy revenue production, or as actual marketings for the livestock gross margin for dairy programs. So that means the decision will allow dairy farmers participating in those risk management programs not to lose coverage on any milk that can't be marketed, and it will be helpful in mitigating some of the catastrophic damage that many dairies face due to the supply chain disruption caused by the coronavirus crisis. The market realities of the COVID-19 era demand solutions, and USDA's decision is a balm for thousands of dairy farmers participating in these important risk management programs. That from the president of the National Milk Producers Federation, Jim Mulhern, who said, "We commend USDA's decision and look forward to discussing further actions that can provide immediate relief for all dairy farmers as outlined in our joint plan developed with the International Dairy Foods Association. Together, we can make a real difference for dairy," and he said, "We are pleased with the USDA's action here." But as if we didn't have enough trouble with the coronavirus situation, add a new one to that in the past couple of days, because an infectious and fatal strain of bird flu has been confirmed in a commercial turkey flock in South Carolina. That's the first case of the more serious strain of the disease in the United States since 2017, and it's a worrisome development for an industry that was devastated by previous outbreaks, because that outbreak that we had back in the 2015 situation caused the death of 43 million birds. And Lindsay Cole, a spokeswoman for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, said, "Yes, it's concerning when we see cases, but we are prepared to respond very quickly, and that was done in this case. The USDA has been working in recent months with scientists and farmers in both North Carolina and South Carolina where a low pathogenic or less severe strain of bird flu had been detected. Low pathogenic bird flu causes few clinical signs in infected birds. However, two strains of low pathogenic bird flu, the H5 and H7 strains, can mutate into highly pathogenic forms, which are frequently fatal to birds and easily transmittable between susceptible species. The low pathogenic cases were already in an area near the South Carolina and North Carolina state line, and the USDA was closely monitoring and testing. But it is another threat to part of our food chain industry here in the United States, and it's certainly one that we don't need with the threat that we have now from the current situation with coronavirus. The pork production industry also had some words of praise and thanks. They extended that thanks to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and in a letter to Congress on Tuesday, they said the financial compounded the situation. The NPPC explained it in a letter to Congress on Tuesday. The financial situation of U.S. hog farmers is perilous and their livelihoods are at stake if the problems in the sector are left unchecked without rapid government intervention. The situation will spiral out of control for pork producers, which also took the message to Capitol Hill. As part of the critical food supply infrastructure, U.S. pork producers went to Capitol Hill to tell members of Congress they are committed to ensuring an uninterrupted supply of high-quality protein to America's kitchens. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, the Pork Producers Council has been in constant communications with its investors and state affiliates through direct outreach and regular conference calls to provide advocacy updates and to hear from pork producers and to visit with congressional staff from Iowa, Minnesota, North Carolina, South Carolina, South Dakota, Illinois, Nebraska, Missouri, and Indiana to bring the message home that the COVID-19 situation is a threat to our food supply chain, including the livestock industry. So that's about all that we can talk about with some definity, because every day the story changes. But quickly, we'll look at the market closes. Livestock futures on Thursday ended the trading week with the lean hog contract, or the June lean hog contract, down $2.27 a hundredweight to end at $48.67. The June live cattle contract ended down $2.10, $84.37, and the April feeder cattle contract ended down $1.15 at $119.52 a hundredweight. The situation with the meatpacking industry, the Smithfield Foods, which is, by the way, the world's biggest pork processor, temporarily closed a large plant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Thursday of this week after more than 80 workers there tested positive for coronavirus. They employ 3,700 workers in that plant. But again, it's taking its impact and having an effect on the markets. Finally, the grain market. Well, we did end with a green screen on Thursday. The July wheat contract up 10¾ cents a bushel at 557.5. July corn up 2 cents at 336¾. And the July soybean contract ended Thursday's trade 9 cents higher a bushel at $8.71 a bushel. So that's a look at another eventful week in the marketplace. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to another confusing discussion next week on the markets.